Oh, good.
Oh, man.
Okay, good morning, everyone. My name's Julie Fedorchak. I'm chair of the Public Service Commission. It is 10 after 10 on August 4th. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the state capitol. For our regularly scheduled commission meeting, I want to call to order. First of all, I want to apologize and thank my colleagues for their patience and everybody else. Hate to be late for commission meetings, but my husband and I are moving, and we closed on a house. We were supposed to close yesterday, and then the bank's IT systems went down, and they couldn't print out any of their closing documents. So we closed at 9, which ended up starting at 9:25. And so it takes a long time to sign all these papers. And anyway, hate to be late, but that's the way it was. I appreciate everybody's patience in waiting for the meeting to get started. So we have a couple of items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, moving on to the regularly scheduled agenda. I have a couple items. I'll get started with those. I move the commission deem complete the final combined application for a corridor certificate and route permit filed on July 26, 2021, and issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company 230 KV Transmission Line, Morton County Siting Application Case Number PU-21-151.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. A public hearing on this application is scheduled for October 7th at 9 a.m. Central Time at the Mandan City Hall at Bosch Freilich Meeting Room in Mandan. On July 21st of this year, MDU filed a combined application for a corridor certificate route permit for a location of approximately 1.5-mile-long 230-kilovolt electrical transmission line. The project will originate at the Heskett Station and terminate at the Mandan Transmission Substation. The 1.5-mile-long transmission line consists of an existing 0.4-mile line segment and construction of two line segments totaling approximately 1.1 miles located in Morton County, North Dakota, as shown on the attached map on this notice of hearing. This is a pretty straightforward, project, just a couple of miles of transmission line in an area that's pretty highly developed. It's essential to some of the things that MDU is doing with that Heskett station. And so we'll take a look and hear from the public at this public hearing when it takes place in October.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, the next item. I move the commission adopt the order, findings of facts, conclusions of law and order in Keith and Deanna Kessler versus Minnesota Power, Division of Elite Incorporated complaint, case number 20-194.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. So there's quite a lot of preliminary information on this order, 2.5 pages. I'm not going to go through all of the procedural issues that kind of played out, but I'll just kind of quickly summarize that. On April 23rd of 2020, Keith and Deanna Kessler filed a complaint concerning the siting of Elite Incorporated's Bison 4 Wind Project Turbine 441 relative to a structure owned by the Kesslers in Section 15, which was near the location of that tower 441. There was a number of back and forths from April until that fall. In the fall, the commission filed an order and motion to dismiss on a couple of things, and then we issued a notice of hearing, narrowed it down in February after back and forth with the attorneys many times over. In February, we issued a notice of hearing identifying three issues as it relates to this complaint. The issues which are really important here were whether the Section 15 structure was an occupied residence at the time the commission issued its order granting a certificate of site compatibility for the project. If the second issue was if the Section 15 structure was an occupied residence at the time of the commission's order, does placement of turbine number 441 violate the commission's order? And then the third issue was, at the public hearing for this original siting of this project, did Elite withhold information relating to the Section 15 structure from the commission that Elite should have communicated to the commission, and if so, what remedies are appropriate? So those were the three issues. First, I'm going to restate them. Was the structure an occupied residence at the time that we granted our order of a certificate of site compatibility for this project? And number two, if the Section 15 structure was an occupied residence, does the existence of that turbine violate our order? And then third, at the public hearing, did Elite withhold information relating to that Section 15 structure? So those are the three issues, and the reason why I'm emphasizing them so much is there was a whole bunch of other issues that the parties brought to the table here, and this order deals with those three issues. That's what we've narrowed down our focus to, and the parties agreed to those as well. Okay, so we had a multiple day hearing on this April 25th and April 22nd on this complaint. And it really comes down to a number of key issues. So as it relates to the location of this turbine, the company testified that they used, prior to the hearing, they used a number of methods for determining whether a location was occupied or not. They used the county plat book and satellite information and site visits, three things. In the Oliver County plat book, farmsteads with livable buildings are marked with an asterisk. I'm just going to read this because this is one of the findings of fact. And the name of the current residence is listed next to the asterisk. The plat book states that, that's not essential. The plat book that they used was compiled in 2011. So in this particular case, the plat book lists an asterisk on Section 15, where the farmstead that's at question here is located, indicating that livable buildings are on that site, and lists the Kesslers as owner of the Section 15 farmstead, but it doesn't say that they're a current resident. So the plat book says there's livable structures, but it doesn't suggest that somebody's living there. Elite testified that they saw that and they knew that. They also testified that they had people out on site driving through the property, that it was mowed and it was, you know, neat and tidy, etc., but that didn't appear that anybody was there. They located that turbine 1,100 feet from that property because they deemed that it was not occupied. During the hearing, the Kesslers testified a number of things. That they've been using that, they used to live on that site, they've used that site for many years, off and on. They've had children living at that site even while it was being constructed, and after the turbine was constructed, they painted the site in 2012, prior to the construction of the wind project. They testified that they expressed concerns to the company about the location of that turbine, that they thought it was too close, and this was after the hearing, during the hearing and after the hearing. Essentially, the Kesslers case stated that they always intended to be able to use that site long-term and didn't want a tower within the setback that the company had agreed to. So that is the essential facts of the case. The company agreed to set it back by 1,400 feet from occupied structures. They determined that this wasn't an occupied structure, occupied residence. The Kesslers said that it is an occupied residence. The law doesn't describe exactly what an occupied residence is. So what this order basically looks at is various factors that the Kesslers brought forward to suggest that it is an occupied structure. And those factors include, you know, how they used it. It includes the fact that they paid utilities on that, have always paid utilities on that structure. There was power, there was water. They had, you know, a laundry list of ways in which they used it. And so ultimately, this order, I'm just going to kind of jump to the conclusions, and my colleagues can fill in on different factors that they feel is pertinent. I ultimately, in this order, brings forward the facts that there's a lot of different ways that you can determine or define occupied residence. The law in North Dakota does not specify it, so it's up to us using our judgment to determine what factors should play into that. A strict definition of occupied residence would suggest that this one isn't, because they aren't living there 100% of the time. But that's not what's required under the law. The siting law asks the commission to look at minimal impact to the people and the environment living around these infrastructure. And to me, that allows plenty of room for people to have other structures on their property that they use occasionally that still need to be protected under the law. The Kesslers maintain electric service, water supply, sanitation at this farmstead. They've maintenanced it. They have had children living at it off and on. They use it for their cattle operations. And they, in their mind, deem that it is an occupied residence. The Kesslers are participating landowners in this project. They have towers, other locations on their site. They have been in contact with the company throughout the process, and the company never checked with them to ask them simply, is this an occupied residence? It would have been very easy for the company to do, and that's quite honestly, in siting of infrastructure, it's the company's burden to make the right decision on these sorts of things, and we trust the companies to bring forward the correct information to us. It was in our conclusion here through this order, if it is approved, we determined that that is an occupied residence under the Siting Act, and that that existence of turbine 441 at that location does violate this order, so it needs to be removed. And so that's the first two issues. Is it an occupied residence? Yes. Does it violate the order as it's written and was approved? Yes, and it needs to be moved. And then the third question was, did the company withhold information at the hearing? And this order deems that the company did not withhold information at the hearing. So that's where we landed on those three issues. With this order, it states that Elite shall remove turbine 441 from its current location within 6 months, that turbine 441 will be idled until removed, and that the commission may grant an extension of time upon a showing of good cause. And then it also requires that if turbine 441 is relocated within the site designated by the existing certificate of site compatibility, Elite shall make a filing with us for the new location, and the new location must be at least 1,400 feet from the farmstead. So this brings to conclusion a very long effort by the commission and our staff. They tried for years to get this negotiated outside of a formal process. some of the issues that the Kesslers had with the company were taken care of that way. This one remaining issue regarding the occupied residence couldn't be settled by the party, so it was brought to us. Took more than a year for us to sort through it all with the parties and the attorneys. And I think that this, you know, we went through a lot of careful examination of both what the law states, what it doesn't state, and what we feel is reasonable and appropriate long term for North Dakota residents, the citizens that live with this infrastructure, with the spirit of the siting law. And this provides, you know, some good, I think, solid policy thinking on the issue of occupied residents for companies and residents moving forward. So thank you to all the staff who helped with this and put in all the hours to help work through this. And I look forward to supporting this conclusion today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Go ahead. Okay, I didn't know if you were... Well, I'll just make a few points. And I'm not going to repeat what Chair Fedorchuk said, because I think she summed it up extremely well in terms of the issues and what we considered. To me, this is a landowner rights issue. And the role of government is to protect, not infringe upon those rights. And when companies choose to do business in this state and contribute to economic development, which we certainly like to see, it's their responsibility to exercise the proper level of due diligence and err on the side of caution. In my opinion, Minnesota Power did not err on the side of caution in this particular case. And it's not a process that would be unusual for them to check out that particular household and that particular site. They failed to do that. So I'm prepared to support this order as well. And the company will be ordered, if it's approved, as mentioned, to either remove... they have to remove the turbine. It's really up to the company whether they choose to relocate that particular turbine. That is something they will have to weigh out in terms of the requirements with their interconnect, other things, but they will obviously, as stated multiple times, be required to remove. And then should they decide to relocate the turbine, they would have to get an adjustment to the site certificate.
I want to actually, was going to highlight the same point and will again, but also expand on it a little bit. When companies site things in the state, whether it's wind, pipelines, electric transmission lines, anything like that, I mean, we've done a lot of that in the last decade, and companies know we're a small agency. We rely on them to bring the information forward. This definition of occupied residence, as has been explained very well, is unclear in the law. It leaves some latitude for us to make a decision, and the decision needed to have been made back when we approved the wind farm site, but we didn't have the argument before us. And the company, any companies that are siting projects, need to present everything that's a close call to us so we can make these decisions, so that then our decisions, if there's dispute on it, it doesn't have, you know, multi-million dollar impacts. It's a matter of just shifting something over a little bit or reaching an agreement with the property owner or something like that. You go ahead and build it first and then see what happens, and we get kind of monumental choices to make in a gray area of law. Also, it's a good opportunity, and I suppose sometimes I forget that when we open a siting hearing, I typically like to encourage the public to view us not as such a formal agency just because we're sitting up front with great big binders full of information, but is some pretty regular folks that they have chosen and elected to these positions, and that our goal is to reach the best possible decisions, and we make the best possible decisions when we have all the information possible. And so it's not only is it important for the companies seeking siting approval for something to come forward, but also for neighbors and landowners to not be at all reluctant to get up and point something out to us if they have a concern. It's tough when that process is in the middle, I know, but it really is vital that we have as much information as possible. I think that you've come up with a good order here, and I'm anxious to support it.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Steve. That concludes my portfolio. And on to Randy and Brian, who both have a number of issues.
Okay. Although the next four deal with issues just up the road a piece from you, a different generation source, but just north a few miles on Highway 49, so you're welcome to stay or to depart.
So when you are late,
I like it. I especially like the hat. Maybe I should start wearing a hat like that.
Thank you all for
your time. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I think they're probably going to talk to them for a while.
That's what I'm thinking too. But I mean, is there dealing with that bankruptcy and stuff?
But could we move ahead maybe? Should we skip to Brian's agenda? There's more damage prevention
okay
type stuff.
You go on first if you want.
I think that would make sense. If there's no objections, maybe we jump to do Brian's.
Because the same question.
You've got a number of damage prevention items that might not be quite as ripe for the media.
As riveting. I was going to wrap up with an overview. Why don't we, if I can have some latitude, Madam Chair, to move some items around.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I will start with BK6. And then I will go to BK7 and BK8. And then I will circle back
to
BK1.
Okay, so. And we'll complete all yours and then we'll jump to Randy's.
All right, I move the Commission adopt the order Northern States Power Company Customer Credit Department of Energy Settlement 2019 application case number PU-21-89.
Second.
This is a reoccurring payment that Northern States Power Company continues to receive from the Department of Energy. And this, again, arises from the U.S. Department of Energy's inability to accept nuclear waste under the Federal Nuclear Waste Policy Act. And this is the 11th settlement. The payment amount is $689,356, which amounts to approximately $2.75 to $3 per average residential customer. As a part of this process, this order would require the company, or I should say that the company brought this idea forward, I believe, to combine this settlement with the pending refund that will be issued as a part of the rate case, a separate case, but the rate case that NSP filed with the commission, that's case number PU-20-441, that will result in a credit of approximately $26 per customer this $2.75 to $3 will be combined with that as a matter of efficiency and to reduce administrative costs in issuing those refunds rather than doing them separately, doing them one. So save a little bit of money, which ultimately then saves the ratepayer a little bit of money. But this came in on February of 2021, and we discussed the matter with NSP and commission staff during an informal hearing, and we did not receive any requests as a part of PU-21-89 in terms of comments and hearing requests. None were received, so I think it's pretty straightforward. This will, I would anticipate in all likelihood, probably be seen on customer bills at the beginning of October.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, next will be BK7. I move the commission suspend the rate and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company transmission facility cost recovery rates, case number PU-21-335.
Second.
On July 15th, 2021, MDU filed a change to its transmission cost adjustment rates to reflect updated electric transmission revenues and costs. This is an annual requirement on this particular rider that the company submit any adjustments. The effect of this particular rate change on a bill for an average residential customer will be a decrease of 3 cents per month or 36 cents per year. So not a lot in terms of the reduction on a customer's bill, but I think it also indicates just how precise these calculations are and how we stay on top of them moving forward. So just a very slight decrease, but nonetheless a decrease. The issues to consider are whether the investments and associated costs for the new or modified electric transmission facilities qualify for recovery, or in this case a credit. Do the proposed rates comply with the tariff, and are the proposed rates just and reasonable? Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by September 17th, 2021. And again, the numbers that I should point out, the numbers that I stated would be contingent on approval of those amounts. So this is a notice of opportunity for hearing, which we issue first, and then we will see if anything results from that and then move into processing this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, the next is BK8. I move the commission reduce the application fee to $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern States Power Company 2020 Power Purchase Agreement Cost Compliance, case number PU-21-336.
Second.
Okay, again, this is another rider adjustment case. I believe between the three regulated utilities, we have a total of 8 that we evaluate on an annual basis. The company submits the information and we go from there. And this one was filed on July 19th, 2021 by NSP. It's a compliance filing in accordance with the comprehensive settlement agreement in a previous rate case, which requires them to annually provide a list of new power purchase agreements less than 50 megawatts in size that have been included in NSP's fuel cost recovery rider during the previous year. This particular power purchase agreement adjustment would result, if approved, in an increase of 1 cent per month for an average residential customer or 12 cents per year. The issues to be considered in the proceeding are whether this PPA is a least cost resource and if there are other relevant pieces of information that the commission should consider. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by September 17th, 2021. And if appropriate, if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, now I'll circle back to BK1. I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and Public Service Commission Ramos Plumbing Incorporated Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-20-359.
Second.
And I hope I pronounced that right. My apologies if I didn't. On July 31st of 2020, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from the city of Minot alleging a violation by Ramos Plumbing Incorporated of North Dakota Century Code, the one-call excavation notice system. The commission did send a letter to them, and Ramos did file a response to the complaint in a timely fashion. On July 12th, 2021, a consent agreement between Public Service Commission advocacy staff and Ramos Plumbing Incorporated was filed for the resolution of the complaint. This was the result of an excavation that was being conducted in the city of Minot for the installation of water and sewer services. The complaint alleges that Ramos violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide an excavation or location notice before the beginning of the excavation. The complaint does not indicate any damage to an underground facility resulting from this excavation. Ramos, their response that they did send back confirms that they did indeed fail to provide an excavation or location notice before the excavation. Under the consent agreement worked out between advocacy staff and Ramos, they agree to be assessed a civil penalty of $500 with $250 suspended on condition that they commit no further violation of the North Dakota one-call law within 5 years of the date of an order accepting the consent agreement. And that would also indicate that they have not had a prior offense. When a company, an excavator, or it can be an operator, a one-call complaint can be filed against an operator as well. When they haven't had a prior violation, it's typical that we would suspend half of the amount as we're doing in this particular case. And I will be supporting this order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, next I move the commission adopt the order and consent agreement and Public Service Commission Northwest Excavating LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-20-363.
Second.
This is goes back to an August 2020 complaint that the commission received, a North Dakota one-call complaint from Red River Communications alleging a violation by Northwest Excavating of the one-call excavation notice system as defined under North Dakota Century Code. The commission followed up the next day, sending a letter to Northwest. Northwest did respond. They filed a response with the commission for the complaint. And on July 12th, 2021, a consent agreement between Public Service Commission advocacy staff and the company was filed for resolution of the complaint. And Northwest Excavating, I should mention, has a principal address in Moorhead, Minnesota. This was work for water line installation in Hankinson, North Dakota. The ticket did expire. After the expiration of the ticket, Northwest began excavating, which essentially means they were digging without a ticket. Once the ticket is expired, you don't have one anymore as an excavator. It's expired, and you don't have one. Even though they had previously filed, the time period had run out for that. And North Dakota Century Code does state that in accepting an emergency, an excavator shall contact the notification center and provide an excavation or location notice before beginning any excavation. And again, as a result of what I explained, they did violate North Dakota Century Code. A consent agreement was worked out between staff and Northwest, and as a result of that, they agree to be assessed a civil penalty of $1,000 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission, and that would be within 10 business days of service of an order accepting or approving the consent agreement, and I will be supporting this one as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, next, I move the Commission adopt the Order on Consent Agreement and Public Service Commission Central Trenching Incorporated Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-20-377, and in Public Service Commission Central Trenching Incorporated Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-20-424.
Second.
I'm going to start with 20-377. This stems from an August 2020 complaint that was filed from Montana Dakota Utilities Company alleging a violation by Central Trenching. The Commission again sent a letter to Central for this complaint, enclosing the complaint, and Central filed a response. In 20-424, the Commission received a one-call complaint as well, again from Montana Dakota Utilities, alleging a violation. Again, a letter was sent to Central, and they did file a response. And this was from an October 2020 complaint. That's when that was received. The other was received in August of 2020, but we're combining the two. The same complainant and the same excavator. Central Trenching is a corporation, a domestic corporation, out of Minot, North Dakota. And in the first complaint, 20-377, the complaint alleged a violation by failing to conduct an excavation in a careful and prudent manner. This was for work to install fiber optic cable. And the second complaint was also installing fiber optic cable. So in the first one from the August complaint, Central damaged a 2-inch natural gas main line, and it impacted two customers. The cost to repair the line is approximately $5,000. In the second one, a 3/4-inch natural gas service line was damaged, impacting one customer. The cost to repair that was $1,500. Again, North Dakota Century Code has been stated numerous times, shall conduct the excavation in a careful and prudent manner. That is a requirement. Advocacy staff did conclude that Central violated North Dakota Century Code in both cases, and under the consent agreement, Central agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $1,100 in case number PU-20-377 and $1,000 in case number 20-424 for a total of $2,100, with half of that amount, $1,050, suspended on the condition that they commit no further violation of the North Dakota law within 5 years of the date of an order approving the consent agreement. And Central then will be required to remit the remainder, which is $1,050, to the Public Service Commission with 10 business days of service of the order. And I will be supporting this as well. And this, again, underscores the importance of a company, an excavator, always exercising the appropriate amount of caution and being careful out in the field. No injuries resulted. We talk about the damage, but when you hit natural gas lines, bad things can happen for obvious reasons. So we want excavators to be safe, we want the public to be safe, and we don't want to see an interruption in service either. So I will be supporting this fine as well. And I want to thank staff for all of the orders on the work. And just on a side note, COVID was an interesting situation in terms of processing these cases. I think it was asked previously if we've seen an uptick in one call complaints, and the answer is no. We've seen a steady decline of those complaints since 2014. And 2014, 2015, quite a number of complaints were coming in, and a lot of those stem from infrastructure that was being placed out in the Bakken. Operators have gotten significantly better. Excavators have gotten significantly better in communicating and placing these facilities in the appropriate way, in a safe fashion. So really, really have to tip my hat to the work staff has done, not just processing these cases, but with education and awareness, because that's really key in all of this. But we haven't seen an uptick. We're just recovering as well from a processing standpoint from the challenges of COVID, the pandemic, and it did create some issues in terms of being able to effectively communicate with all of the players to get these processed. But we definitely have a very favorable trajectory in place. We want to make sure we keep it that way. And again, the credit really goes to the work staff does in this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just one comment, Brian. I really appreciate your focus on the damage prevention and kind of wrangling a whole bunch of these, getting them out and done and tied up. I think it's really helpful. It'll be good for staff, too, to just get them off their plate and get these things finished up. So thank you for that. Thank you to staff for pushing through and getting these orders and the next step done on these cases. I did note on BK 3, 4, and 5, just one small typo that I think is in a template someplace, so I'm going to make mention of it. It's on, like, okay, so BK 3 on page 2 of the order. And then, Pat, you can see it on the other ones as well. Under the second paragraph from the bottom, on September 9th, 2020, central personnel provided and excavation notice. It should just be an. And that was that same error, and should be an, was located in BK 4 and 5 as well. So that's all. Thank you. And?
I didn't like the same thing.
Oh, okay. I was like, that maybe found one more. All right, that's it for me.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Well, always feel free to make those suggestions before we actually have the order, because we've got them in hand ahead of time. So
I just noticed it this morning.
I actually noticed it last week and had them all piled up and forgot to pass it over to staff. So my apologies for that.
Next is BK4. I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and public service commission CenturyLink Communications LLC damage prevention enforcement case number PU-20-386.
Second.
Okay, on August 31st, 2020, the commission received a North Dakota One Call complaint, and this is going to be challenging. Pat, can you help me with the pronunciation of where anyone who is might know, is it right?
CenturyLink?
No, not CenturyLink. you would be so fortunate since you know that one. So how would we do the next
dot
one?
Face?
Well, I'm just going to refer to it as the farm. The spelling is GUDAJTES. And I'm just going to Gadatis? Okay. Right. This is the most challenging part of my portfolio this morning. So, alleging a violation by CenturyLink Communications of the One Call Excavation Notice System, the commission did send a letter to CenturyLink enclosing the complaint, and CenturyLink did file a response in return. The Gadatis family farm filed a response as well to CenturyLink's response, and then in June of 2020, a consent agreement between Public Service Commission advocacy staff and CenturyLink Communications LLC was filed for resolution of the complaint. This complaint alleges a violation by CenturyLink of Century Code by failing to locate and mark its underground facilities within the location period. So this was related to work for mole plow tiling near Warsaw, North Dakota. And CenturyLink did submit a positive response ticket indicating that its facilities had been marked, but the due date was beyond the locate period that they are required. And that was 3 days later than when CenturyLink would have had to meet the deadline. So, and North Dakota Century Code states an operator with underground facilities shall locate and mark or otherwise provide the approximate horizontal location of the underground facilities of the operator within the location period or as agreed by the parties. Under the consent agreement, CenturyLink agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $6,000 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 business days of service of an order approving the consent agreement.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, and the last incredibly exciting one I have on my agenda. I move the commission adopt the order and consent agreement in Public Service Commission XL Energy Incorporated Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-20-457.
Second.
And this one is actually, I think, quite interesting because it's one of just a few complaints that we've had related to this, and it ties back to a change in law, I believe, in 2019. The two of the more notable changes, one was positive response. Once lines are marked, facilities are marked, the companies have to indicate that. So whoever requests the ticket knows that there either are facilities or there are not facilities within that excavation location. And the other was site ID, which is being specific in terms of indicating to the operators, here's where the work's going to occur. And I'll circle back to why that's really important. But this was a complaint received from the city of West Fargo alleging a violation by XL Energy. Again, of the one-call excavation notice system, the commission did send a letter on the complaint. XL filed a response to the complaint, and a consent agreement in this past July was reached between Public Service Commission advocacy staff and XL Energy for resolution of the complaint. And again, as I alluded to, the complaint is a violation by failing. It's a violation by XL by failing to provide site identification information within its locate request. The work was for an abandoned gas line in West Fargo. So again, when the ticket came in, it was vague when I read that particular ticket. There wasn't any damage as a result of this excavation. But again, going back to Century Code, unless otherwise exempted, the ticket request must include site identification information by one or more of the following means: white marking, digital white lining, project staking, geographic information system, shape file, detailed drawing, map, or other means agreed upon by the parties to the ticket. Advocacy staff concluded that XL violated this section of code, and under the consent agreement, they agree to be assessed a civil penalty of $200 payable to the Public Service Commission within 10 business days of service of an order approving the consent agreement. And the reason ticket requests need to be specific, within reason, but they do need to be specific, is that if they are not in a rural environment, the locator, the operator, has to locate either four contiguous quarter sections or five linear miles, which would come at significant expense if they have to try and cover that amount of ground to locate their facilities without knowing where the specific work is going to occur. In a city or urban area, it's three contiguous city blocks. So if the work is going to occur in front of a house, for example, a residence or a business, and it's going to be within 100 feet to the east or 100 feet to the west of that facility, and it's indicated in the ticket, then the locators know that is the area they need to mark. It's very specific. It provides a buffer zone during the excavation process itself, and it's just more efficient. So this is really about communication. Without that, locators could literally spend the better part of a day covering such a wide area. So that was a reasonable change in 2019, I believe. Is that correct, Jack, when that site identification, was that part of the 2019 package of changes? So it was a really good common sense approach to this, and it just saves time, money, and it's about communication. But so I talked about the five different cases, and you have to remember that while damage prevention at the commission level is about compliance and enforcement, it's also about awareness. We don't want to see complaints coming into the commission, and I like the trajectory, the downward slope that we're seeing on those complaints, but it's about public safety first and foremost. And then you have interruption of service, you have cost to repair when facilities are hit, but really it's about awareness, and I think that's been the key in seeing these numbers go down, the awareness campaign, and again the work that staff puts in. Stacy and Victor were up at the State Fair last week for 811 Day, did a great job, and they continue to work with the public, and whether it's a residential homeowner, whether it's a commercial excavator, on making sure they understand the law and are following it out in the field. So we're on the right track, we continue to be on the right track, but the work is never done. But thank you to staff for the work they do.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Brian. Now we'll jump back to your portfolio, Commissioner Christman.
Okay, and just as a precursor, the first four items in my portfolio deal with the same permit at the same mine. And I'm just wanting to be extra clear about it, because it is that old Beulah mine south of Beulah that recently came through bankruptcy and is less than a year from losing their only coal customer. And so what we have here are two revisions. And once those are in place, we will renew it for another five-year period. That's the length of mine permits. And then after the two revisions and the renewal, the fourth motion will be to transfer it to the new owners. So it kind of takes a little concentration. And this is all for one of their two permits. It's the one where the active mining is occurring. It's basically what is west of Highway 49 if you drive up there. However, the land, the old mine area immediately west of the highway, where you see an ash pit, a haul road going to the east side, and the actual office and shop complex, those are not part of this permit that I'm talking about here. So, the first one, I move the commission conditionally approve revision number 32 to surface coal mining permit number KRSB-8603 held by the Dakota Westmoreland Corporation. Revision 32 updates the permit in response to a midterm review and a pre-renewal review simultaneous with revision number 33. Revision number 32 modifies the post-mining topography, revises the reclamation schedule, updates surface water management plans, updates the worst-case bond estimate, and updates other information including mining and reclamation plans in Dakota Westmoreland Corporation, revision number 32 to permit KRSB-8603, application PSC, case number RC-18-431.
Second.
So on December 27th of 2018, the Dakota Westmoreland Corporation filed the application for revision 32. So it's 2.5 years old already. The revision addresses items requested by the reclamation during our midterm review. It is being approved simultaneous with revision 33, as I said. And again, this revision updates the operation and reclamation plans, including a number of areas, a number of subjects. including the post-mining topography in the gold and iron pit areas, as they are referred to. So revision 32 was considered a significant revision because of changes to the post-mining topography in the gold pit area and the changes to the reclamation schedule. Dakota Westmoreland has not complied with their previously approved reclamation schedule, which has delayed reclamation and increased the worst-case bond amount. Dakota Westmoreland is again requesting additional time for completing reclamation of the final pit areas, and their proposed timeline may be unrealistic given their available equipment and manpower. So this requires a variance from the contemporaneous reclamation requirements that normally requires that all reclamation efforts through the initial seeding be completed within 3 years of completion of mining activities. Two of the surface owners nearby filed written objections to this revision application and raised a variety of concerns, including Dakota Westmoreland's lack of progress in reclaiming in the gold pit area. The Reclamation Division staff met with these surface owners in October of last year and informed them of their right to an informal conference and a formal hearing. Neither requested an informal conference. So on July 16th of this year, one of those same two surface owners submitted additional comments via email expressing concerns regarding the lack of reclamation progress, weed control, and lease payments. He also requested that the company be required to submit a monthly progress report on reclamation progress in the gold pit area. Our staff recommends adding a condition to the approval of Revision 32 that requires Dakota Westmoreland to submit quarterly reports to the Reclamation Division with the approximate volume of spoil and overburden that has been moved for backfilling the final gold pit area, and the approximate quantities of topsoil and subsoil respread in each pit area during each 3-month period beginning October 1st of 2021. So that covers that request for the monthly reports, although we're doing quarterly reports. Dakota Westmoreland submitted the affidavits of publication for the newspaper notices. We also notified the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. Evidence of adequate liability insurance is currently on file, and the revision updates the worst-case reclamation liability surety bond in the amount of $14,516,993. That will cover the current worst-case reclamation condition in this permit. That is, I believe, about $4.5 million increase. So it is a significant additional financial assurance that we have here that was necessary because of the falling behind that occurred. Regarding those complaints, the big one had to do with the quarterly reports, I think, they requested monthly, but I think the quarterly reports is going to be really important to making sure that they don't fall behind like that again and are able to actually get this done. So the Reclamation Division has completed its review of the permit revision application and recommends conditional approval, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just a couple of thoughts on this one. Thank you to staff for all the work that has gone into this. I know it's just an incredible amount of work to oversee this big process, and it's really where the rubber meets the road and our vision and our responsibility as it comes to mine reclamation for North Dakota and oversight. Here's a mine that's may or may not be going away, we don't know, but the change of hands and the concerns that raises for the people living near there and citizens in North Dakota for the future of that mine and making sure that it's reclaimed properly, this is the time for us to really focus in on that. And you guys have done that with this effort and the increased bond level and just maintaining that strong oversight with companies to ensure that what needs to be done is being done. I really appreciate the additional reporting And I think that's vital, and hopefully the neighbors in that area are comforted by that as well. And it's also great to have these landowners who are holding the companies responsible and keeping track of what's going on and letting us know when they have concerns. That is vital, and as we respond to those concerns, that increases people's trust that we're doing what we need to do and that they can get response from the government that's supposed to be there to serve them. And so this is, I think, a great example of regulatory oversight working the way it should. And my hat's off to all you guys upstairs for your work on this, and Randy, you too, as the portfolio holder, and Jack, the general counsel. I know that you spend a lot of time on this stuff, and it is really important. Just one question I have regarding these increased costs. I'm just curious, when they delay reclamation, what drives the costs up? Why do costs get more expensive?
Well, for one thing, they're continuing to mine and falling behind, so the material that they have to move keeps getting further and further away, and that's one part of it. I don't know if staff has anything they want to add to that, but just that, you know, it's always nicest if when you're picking up a big scoop of overburden, you're just swinging around and putting it into the hole that you're filling, not that it's a quarter of a mile away.
That makes sense. Interesting.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, I move the commission approve revision number 33 to surface coal mining permit number KRSB-8603 held by the Dakota Westmoreland Corporation to identify the next five-year coal removal sub-areas and to update other information and mining reclamation plans for the next five-year permit term in Dakota Westmoreland Corporation, Revision 33, Permit KRSB-8603 Application, PSC Case Number RC-21-94.
Second.
On February 12th of this year, Dakota Westmoreland filed the application for this revision. It identifies the next five-year coal removal sub-area and addresses items needing updating during our pre-renewal review. The revision also updates business entity and right of entry information and operation and reclamation plans. The revision was considered a significant revision, again, because mine closure will happen sooner than previously planned, and the life of the mine is being shortened. The permit is expected to continue until mining in the permit is expected to continue until March of next year. Dakota Westmoreland supplies coal to MDU's Heskett Power Station north of Mandan, and of course that is ending its activity. Dakota Westmoreland submitted affidavits of publication for the newspaper notices. We notified the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. No objections to this revision application were received. Evidence of adequate liability insurance is currently on file, and again, the surety bond is $14.517 million, which covers the worst-case reclamation conditions. Again, the Reclamation Division has completed its review of the permit and recommends approval, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission approve renewal number 7 to surface coal mining permit number KRSB-8603 held by the Dakota Westmoreland Corporation to extend the permit term on the existing permit area for another 5 years until August 7, 2026 in Dakota Westmoreland Corporation. Renewal number 7, permit KRSB-8603, application PSC case number RC-21-95.
Second.
So now we have revised the permit. This will renew it until 2026, even though mining will only occur, coal production will occur only for less than a year, but of course the permit needs to stay active while they do the reclamation process. So on February 12th, Dakota Westmoreland filed the application for this renewal to continue on till 2026. It covers portions of 11 sections in Mercer County, totaling 3,871.7 acres. Again, it serves the Heskett Station through 2022. They filed the affidavits of publication for the newspaper notices. We notified, again, the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. No objections to the renewal were received. Evidence of adequate liability insurance is the same as I mentioned previously, $14.517 million. And the reclamation division recommends approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
This one gets a little trickier, and if you want to keep track, because I'm going to be dealing with four different companies and they all have the name Westmoreland in them. So if you want to jot down four names so it makes sense, I'll just read them slowly here. Prior to bankruptcy, the Beulah Mine is owned by Dakota Westmoreland Corporation. That's the company that have been mentioned in these three previous cases. Dakota Westmoreland Corporation is a subsidiary of Westmoreland Coal Company. Following the bankruptcy, which became effective in March of 2019, the Beulah Mine is owned by Westmoreland Beulah Mining. And Westmoreland Beulah Mining is a subsidiary of Westmoreland Mining. So I hope everybody has that straight. I move the commission conditionally approve the transfer of surface coal mining permit number KRSB-8603 for the Beulah Mine from Dakota Westmoreland Corporation to Westmoreland Beulah Mining LLC and Westmoreland Beulah Mining LLC permit transfer permit KRSB-8603 application PSC case number RC-20-154.
Second.
On March 23rd of 2020, Westmoreland Beulah Mining LLC submitted an application for the transfer, sale, and assignment of rights under permit KRSB-8603 for the Beulah Mine. Westmoreland Beulah Mining will be both the permittee and operator for the Beulah Mine and will assume all regulatory obligations that were previously held by Dakota Westmoreland. Westmoreland Coal Company and subsidiaries, including Dakota Westmoreland, that operated the Beulah Mine, filed for bankruptcy on October 19th of 2018. The purchase and sale agreement between Westmoreland Coal Company and Westmoreland Mining was effective March 15th of 2019. Westmoreland Beulah Mining is a subsidiary of Westmoreland Mining, as I mentioned, that was formed to own and operate the Beulah Mine. The permit contains, as I mentioned earlier, about 3,872 acres located in 11 sections in Mercer County. The current permit expires August 7th of 2026, since that renewal we just did. The Beulah Mine has produced less than 500,000 tons of lignite per year since 2017 for the Heskett Station. The contract ends in May of next year, and the permit area will cease. The mining in the permit area will cease. As part of the transfer application, Dakota Westmoreland was required to submit business entity and violation information and replacement bond and liability insurance documents. Records currently in the Office of Surface Mining's application violator system do not indicate that the applicant nor any affiliated companies have any unpaid civil penalties, violations that have not been abated within the required period of time, or a pattern of willful violations. Westmoreland Beulah Mining submitted the surety bond that was talked about previously of a little over $14.5 million for this area. This amount is sufficient to cover the worst case reclamation condition in the permit area. Westmoreland Beulah Mining also provided evidence of adequate liability insurance. Again, that $14.5 million is about a $4.5 million increase from previous. Dakota Westmoreland published notices of transfer application in the Bismarck Tribune and the Beulah Beacon, sent notices to the appropriate agencies and landowners. No objections or requests for informal conference were received. Staff recommends that a condition be attached to the permit transfer, requiring Westmoreland Beulah Mining to incorporate the business entity, property ownership, and related information into the existing permit by filing a permit revision no later than November 21st. That will likely be an insignificant revision, so it may not be before us in this form, but it is coming, and don't be shocked when you see that this is already being revised. That is just the process that we need to follow. Westmoreland Beulah Mining has now filed all the required documents for the permit transfer, and staff recommends that it be conditionally approved. I recommend the same, along with the warning that there will expect there's a condition on this that they have that revision done here in just the next few months on this. But also remember, this is the permit, all the process for that permit on the west side. I expect we will be going through this in the not too distant future for the old original permit area that's primarily on the east side of the highway. That paperwork was not finalized for this, but we have this opportunity to go through again in the not too distant future.
I had one question. Is this the largest mine to be completely reclaimed, at least in recent memory?
In North Dakota?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, when it's completely reclaimed, I don't know how it will compare to consolidated. Oh, yeah, Indian Head.
It's comparable, but.
Yeah. I'm just interested to see how this ties up if they're moving overburden.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I will just say, but this is a very large and significant one, and it will be a long time till it's completely done and ready for bond release, sadly, and that's just the nature of this business. It takes a long time, thus we require the financial assurances, and now is, I guess, my turn to just kind of reassess this phenomenal job by staff. And it doesn't start when we get these cases. It starts when you start with a brand new mine permit and documenting what was there, and then during the course of things, monitoring to make sure is there adequate amount of fill to fill that in pit when someday you get to the end and there's not new overburden being excavated to fill that pit. There has to be adequate material on hand. And thus we have our scientists and engineers and experts upstairs, and phenomenal job doing this. It becomes increasingly burdensome when a bankruptcy is involved and you're dealing with new companies, and staff has done a phenomenal job, I think, of making sure that everything is finalized accurately and that we have the right companies taking responsibility for the right things and making sure this is all done correctly, because as was stated earlier, a failure can undermines maybe a bad choice of words, but for lack of a better term, undermine the people's confidence in our ability to oversee this, because this is an area where innovation can't replace regulation. Without regulation, this is not ever going to happen. It requires innovation to do it efficiently. It requires regulation and responsible oversight to assure that it does happen.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, now we'll move a few miles north to a different mine. I move the commission approve revision number 3-4 to surface coal mining permit number NACT-8503 held by the Coteau Properties Company to delete all 1,831.97 acres from this permit and transfer all reclamation liabilities on this acreage to permit number NACT-1801 for the Freedom Mine.
Second.
The application for this permit for 1801 was approved in February of this year, and it consolidated 5,272 acres of five separate permit areas, including 8503 that we're dealing with here at the Freedom Mine. So, although it seems confusing, this is actually part of a simplification process. Coal mining is complete in the consolidated permit area, which includes all five of these areas. Most of the acreage is in the reclamation status, but portions of the consolidated area contain haul roads, sedimentation ponds, stockpiles, buildings, facilities, utilities, and structures that are used to support mining in other permit areas, thus not being bond released. Following permit 1801 approval, Coteau filed revision applications for the five consolidated permits to delete the entire acreage from each of those permits and transfer all the liabilities on the acreage to permit 1801. This is the first of those five that's ready for finalization. Permit 8503 will be effectively terminated with this deletion of acres. However, the acres affected by mining, again, I want to emphasize, remain subject to the applicable mining and reclamation standards under permit 1801. The existing self and collateral bonds that total $186 million are sufficient to cover the worst case reclamation cost estimate for the consolidated bond area that includes all permits at the Freedom Mine. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of the permit revision application and recommends approval, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And my final portfolio item, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and order in Public Service Commission versus Quest Corporation, order to show cause, case number PU-20-442.
Second.
This is an old one that has been around a long time and will continue to take additional oversight on our part. On August 27th, so almost a year ago, Commission staff received an official complaint from Sharon Gerbig stating that she and her husband Gordon have unresolved issues regarding the quality of their landline phone service provided by Quest. I want to emphasize, when I say almost a year ago, staff had been dealing with complaints that just weren't filed formally or informally with us far before that. Their problems are much more than a year old. So they filed the complaint in August of last year. On December 10th, we held a formal hearing. On February 4th, and again on July 1st, informal hearings were held to discuss the actions Quest was taking to address the service quality issues. So through this, one of the things that we have found is that, or among the things, I guess, are that Quest provides telecommunication services to three customers in that area. And that area, to explain it, is kind of south of Medora, but I would explain it more north of Amadon, but in that area. There's also two others besides Sharon and Gordon Gerbig in that area, and they're supplied service, supposedly, on a pair gain system that consists of copper line and repeaters. And Mr. Giles, who was a witness for Quest, testified that repairs to this system continue to fail and that really only used replacement parts can be found. So replacing the repeaters would not likely ever fix the issues. Quest is no longer able to maintain or repair their current system to provide reliable service to these customers. and the cost to extend fiber optic telecommunications, the 18 miles to serve the customers, is approximately $1.3 million. Now, there we're talking fiber as opposed to copper. It's my understanding, although we didn't delve into this into the hearing, even though fiber does much more and is a much better solution, it really doesn't cost any significant amount more. So if someone's thinking, well, they could just go with copper for phone service, that wouldn't change the price. However, my own personal opinion, $1.3 million seems like a gross exaggeration. They have easements. There's been something plowed in there before, so it's not like it's insurmountable terrain. I don't know how it's $1.3 million. However, 18 miles would be a huge investment under any reasonable estimate for three customers. We found that the failure of the pair gain system has caused outages in phone services. The commission staff has worked at resolving the quality of service with the Gerbigs and Quest. And that is not the commission staff responsibility, and I'm bothered by the fact that it seems like if our staff doesn't do it, Quest is not really getting after looking for a solution. And that has to stop, that our staff has to take responsibility to find proposed solutions. Quest offered and delivered satellite phones to the customers before determining they were not a suitable substitution for landline service. Discussions have been held regarding HughesNet or a cellular repeater option through Kohler Communications, which is a company located in Dickinson. These and other options remain open, including, in my mind, replacement of the traditional phone lines, even at an extraordinary cost, because in my opinion, their service area is not this long distance for three customers. Their service area is North Dakota, and they have tens of thousands of customers. So in conclusion, due to the frequency and duration of outages for the customers, and Quest's inability to adequately repair the pair gain system that is supposed to be providing services to the customers, Quest has failed to provide reliable and quality service. This order assesses a civil penalty of $5,000, which is the maximum penalty we can assess in this case. It also orders that the Quest ensure quality and reliable service to the customers by no later than November 1st of this year, and submit monthly updates to us until reliable phone service is provided. We're also ordering that a means of providing adequate service be found, and Quest shall complete an annual, that after a means of providing adequate service is found, the Quest shall complete an annual review and file an update with the commission. My just last thoughts on it, I think there seems to be now a point where probably two different solutions are about to be tried out there, and so hopefully that will happen. But if not, by November 1st, I intend to be back on this, making sure that those customers have been reasonably satisfied, and we're going to stay on this, but this will wrap up this particular complaint case. It doesn't mean that another one can't be forthcoming.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Excellent. Thank you, Randy. Well, we got a lot of cases wrapped up today, and a lot of hard work is being completed by our staff to get us to these points. So again, kudos out to everybody for pushing through a lot of these cases. Let's see, looking ahead at announcements. There's an EERC conference occurring tomorrow out in Grand Forks that a couple of my colleagues are planning to attend, and a Trail County Natural Gas project groundbreaking or announcement dedication. Sadly, can't be at that myself. Previous commitments have me elsewhere, but It's a really exciting new project in Hillsborough, represents a long awaited natural gas service to that community, something that we've, at the commission, myself and others have worked hard to try to find different avenues to make that happen, and here we have a solution coming forward, so that's an exciting thing happening tomorrow out in Hillsborough. And then later on in this month, we have a formal hearing on the Bowman Wind project that will no doubt be very interesting. There's a lot of strong feelings about that one coming from some of the agencies and from some of the folks in that area. So no shortage of exciting and controversial things happening at the commission these days. With that, I think we can adjourn and take questions from the media.